just about 10 o'clock, coming right up, it's Air Cascadia with your host, Chris Andre. And then at 10:15, Flashpoints celebrates the 65th birthday of Pacifica Radio's KPFA with a reading given by the late poet and activist June Jordan, given during the 1991 Gulf War. And we'll also hear an excerpt from a recent speech by theoretical physicist Michio Kaku. At 11 o'clock, the food show today features an interview with Laura Pacheco. She owns the Seed and Thistle Apothecary, and they're going to be speaking with Jeannie Marshall, author of The Lost Art of Feeding Kids, and they interview Mary Weaver Chapin, the curator of graphic arts at the Portland Art Museum, all about the Feast and Famine exhibition that's currently on display there. And momentarily, we'll get to Chris Andre with Air Cascadia. Thanks for tuning in today.
KBOO is a proud co-sponsor of the 2014 Earth Day celebration, Saturday, April 26th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Kenton Park on North Brandon and North Kilpatrick Streets in Portland.
The Earth Day 2014 theme, Reverse Migration, will focus on local culture and businesses. Over 100 sustainable businesses and organizations, including KBOO Community Radio, will participate in this event.
This celebration will also feature lots of live music and entertainment. Celebrate our planet at the 2014 Earth Day celebration, Saturday, April 26th, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at Kenton Park. More information on this event can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Wednesday, April 16th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Headlines first before important news on Hanford. Hanford, of course, being in many ways the only news there is for people living in Cascadia. It's indeed, without exaggerating, a life or death story every time we do a story on Hanford. We'll be speaking momentarily with Dan Sears. First, the weather to get through. Haven't been doing that recently. I apologize. Today, 50% chance of rain. I think we've seen that first 50 already. Otherwise, overcast with a high around 60 and calm winds. Tonight, rain quite lightly. Late, however, lows around 50. Not much in the way of wind for tomorrow. Expect more rain. Highs around 61. And for tomorrow night, 50-50 as far as showers are concerned. And low around 43. That's it for your local Cascadia weather. And careening around the region and farther afield, the president, this is tying in with other stories on Megalodes and on the Keystone XL. Whatever's going on here in our region, across the country, in places like Nebraska and up into the Dakotas and Canada, of course, there are tribal nations, indigenous peoples are up in arms, and I do mean literally up in arms, of the Keystone XL, the pipelines, and what this is, the destruction and havoc this is creating on traditional tribal lands, in many cases sacred lands. Let's say the Warm Springs Nation decided that they were going to put a gigantic pipeline right through the middle of one of Portland's oldest churches. There's an Anglican church downtown made out of stones, right? What if they ran right through that, or through the Unitarian Church, any one of the big churches? What if they did that? It's unthinkable that that TransCanada and its associated partners would put this thing straight through sacred land. Here, though, we've and this may seem small, but it ties in with the rest of it. The president of the Quinault Indian Nation says the tribe has, in fact, decided to reopen Lake Quinault to non-tribal use, but there are going to be a few rules this time. The tribe did, in fact, close the Olympic Peninsula late last June, citing pollution problems, unsafe activities, invasive species issues, and diminished fish runs. So the lake is once again, perhaps unfortunately, open to use by people who might not have this respect for it that the Quinault Nation has. And again, this is one where the problems begin. Nebraska, last night, a small number of Secaucus Lakota tribal members took a stand against the megalodes rolling through reservation lands. Lakota Voice arrived after being passed. A Lakota Voice being a representative of the tribe arrived after being passed by one megalode headed north on Highway 83. It's very heavily traveled thoroughfare for semi-trailers traveling from Nebraska. Chap named Gary Dorr, who we will be speaking with later in the week, a part of the Oyate Wahakanaka Wahikam, shielding the people, in other words, an enrolled member of the Nez Perce, was there at the location where this action took place. It's called the Rosebud Casino gas stations where it happened. A number of tribal members monitored the situation until the tribal police came. What happened was that they eventually stopped the truck hauling the mega load and prevented it from continuing. The truck turned around and went back to its last stopping off point. That was a huge accomplishment, and again took place not only under the darkness of night, but under the radar of mainstream media, which chose to ignore it in any case. We're waiting to speak with Dan Sears, and he should be on the line in just a moment. On that note, we're going to revisit Hanford because Air Hanford revisits us. Good morning, Dan. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me, Chris.
So, there is a meeting tonight. Can you fill listeners in on what's taking place?
Yeah, tonight at the Doubletree Hotel at 1000 Northeast Multnomah Street, the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, the U.S. Department of Energy, and the Washington Department of Ecology will be holding what's called a State of the Site meeting. So before that, we're going to have people gathering outside the meeting venue with banners, and there'll be a few speakers discussing what's at stake at Hanford. What we know from recent accounts is that workers are being sickened by the nuclear waste stored at the Hanford site. There's nuclear waste reaching the Columbia River right now, and the tanks that hold probably the worst radioactive and chemical waste in the world are leaking and leaking into soil, and eventually that's going to move into groundwater in the Columbia River itself. So it's very urgent for people to join us tonight. The meeting starts at 7, but again, like I said, we'll be outside having a quick rally and And we're asking people to bring something that they feel is threatened, someone or something that they feel is threatened by what's going on in Hanford.
Hanford, though, establishing what is going on in the leaking storage tanks, these things are too hot for people to really, even using the latest robotics, is still too hot to get in there and find out what's going on. And we want to emphasize to people that it isn't just what originally was stored in the tanks. You know, this has been there, it's been there for a long time, and these elements are intrinsically unstable. They have very high valencies. They want to bond with other molecules, perhaps molecules from which the tanks themselves are made. Now, we seem to know very little. To the best of your knowledge, has any progress been made in understanding what some of the reactions might be taking place in there? That would be one way to understand what one could expect. At this meeting, are we going to get any more information about what's really going on? When these things leak, what is it in fact that they're leaking? Because it's not the same thing that originally went in, is it?
Yeah, I think that people should look forward to an information-rich event, particularly from the public participants who will be in the room giving testimony, sharing their stories. There have been, you know, numerous Hanford workers who've spoken up about what's going on at Hanford and have expressed concern about the lack of adequate monitoring of what's in those tanks, of what's getting into the ground, and of workers' safety. And so I think all of those issues will be on the table tonight. And again, it's at 6:30 at the Doubletree Hotel at 1000 Northeast Multnomah here in Portland.
Dan, thank you so much for that. Will there be opportunities for people to participate, ask questions? I'd like to know who pays for testing of these substances that have been found leaking. Who pays for that? Who's in charge?
You and I, Chris.
Yeah, that's it. Dan, thank you very much. We've been speaking with Dan Sears with the Willamette Riverkeeper, Columbia Riverkeeper, and we'll see all of you out there at the Doubletree this evening. If you're still there, Dan, you want to give listeners the details on where and when?
Yeah, we'll be gathering outside at 6:30 p.m. at 1000 Northeast Multnomah here in Portland.
Thanks for that. Continuing on, here in the U.S., Muslim groups and civil liberties advocates applauded the decision by New York Police Department officials to disband a controversial unit that tracked the daily lives of Muslims as part of efforts to detect alleged terror threats. Look around the country. How many Muslim terror threats do you see? How many crazed, for the most part, gentlemen, the male persuasion and white skin? How many acts of sheer terror and mayhem, violence, mindless, brainless brutality do you see taking place everywhere on a weekly basis, recently almost a daily basis? And today Americans are considering a year after the Boston Marathon bombing and weeping into their coffee over that. That was two guys who had some serious issues indeed, but that is about the only instance that one can say, yeah, that the fact of being Muslim might tangentially have something to do with it. Other than that, the mayhem that's taken place in between is stunning. It's shocked the rest of the world. Returning to the New York City Police Department, Muslim groups say that there are concerns about whether other problematic practices remain in place, and there should be concerns about some of those practices. There's no evidence, though, to back up claims that the New York Police Department's heavy-handed tactics work, right? There's never any evidence of this, no evidence whatsoever that torture works, no evidence that when we violate basic human moral moral dimensions of our lives that any of it serves any real purpose whatsoever. It certainly doesn't save lives. The banning of Students for Justice in Palestine at Northeastern University in Boston on March 7th, along with the university threat of disciplinary measures against some of the members of the group, replicates sanctions being imposed against numerous student Palestinian rights groups across the country. It's a growing problem. The attacks and the disturbingly similar forms of punishment appear to be part of a coordinated effort by the Israeli government and the Israeli lobby, APEC, to blacklist all student groups that challenge the official Israeli narrative. No less than Chris Hedges has been looking into this problem and has revealed a great deal what's going on beneath the surface of academia. This has been Air Cascadia for Wednesday, April 16th, 2014. Tammy Dean engineered the show today. Thanks for that, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Aux exploités pour l'extermination des exploiteurs. Une épitaphe pour quelques copains.
The Union of Time Thieves is a monthly exploration of urban life. In this installment, we will be using one of the Situationist International's most beloved techniques to create a revised look at Portland's cityscape. Join us for one entire hour dedicated to détournement, fugitives, and refugees on the Union of Time Thieves on April 28th from 10 to 11 p.m. only on KBOO Portland.